Thank you, microdose.com. That's all I have to say right now. I have been traveling so much, planes, cars, like long, long drives. My body hurts, you know, sleeping in different beds, in different hotels, you know, everything's kind of screwy. And thank you, microdose.com. I know you've heard the word microdose before, but this is microdosing THC. And microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And you deserve to feel good. You can go to their website, microdose.com, and learn all about microdosing THC. But I'm telling you, it is amazing. They have all different strains that help with all different issues. A friend of mine just sent me a photo of her with her order from microdose.com saying thank you. I'm telling you, a lot of people do this, all sorts of people. And they do it to feel healthier. They do it to perform better. They do it to focus. They do it to sleep. They do it for pain. They do it for relaxation. It really helps your mind and body be at peace. So really check it out. Microdose.com is amazing. And the product, they taste delicious, number one. But the product is so damn good. And you deserve to feel better. So what are you going to do? You're going to go to microdose.com. If you don't already know, you're going to learn about microdosing THC. And when you get there, you're going to get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Promo code Judy Gold. It is available nationwide. That is microdose.com, promo code Judy Gold, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, for 30% off and free shipping. That is a lot, 30% off. And the stuff is amazing. I'm telling you, microdose.com, promo code Judy Gold. You're welcome.
Well, I don't see the point in waiting any longer. Let's bring her out. The star attraction, the one you came to see. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Ms. Judy Gold.
So you end up going to DC and you become a lobbyist at the Close-Up Foundation, correct?
Well, I became, first I worked at the Close-Up
Foundation. And then you went to APCO.
Yeah.
Right.
So the Close Up Foundation is the nonprofit that brings kids to Washington. It was started during the Vietnam War to be able to, like, kids get close up to government and be contributing citizens.
Right.
So again, you know how kids say have a plan? Again, the fact that I graduated, that was not part of the plan.
Right, right.
So I graduate, and then my roommate, my best friend from sleepaway camp, has a boyfriend in Washington. Mm-hmm. And she said, let's go to Washington. She was at Northwestern. So I'm like, well, okay, because I have zero plan. And I have this degree in broadcast communications. And my grandmother says to me, you should be an anchor for the news. I'm like, oh, okay, I should do that. And so I put on my spectator pumps to go, you know, interview everywhere. And with my fake leather briefcase, I didn't understand. Even I was, again, I just didn't know anything. I didn't know that Naga hide wasn't like a fashion thing.
Right, right.
I was very proud of my Naga hide. That was washable briefcase. And I couldn't get a job doing anything in broadcasting. So I then, a friend of mine from college worked for this educational foundation, which I ended up loving.
You love that. You go to APCO Worldwide.
I started out as their receptionist.
You did?
And I also got to order supplies. I think I was a terrible receptionist. That's why I got promoted. Because that was back when it was like...
No one starts like that anymore. Now, they all want to go in and be president of the company.
I know.
What is that? So you're...
By the way, we have an entry-level job opening.
You do?
www.thecreativecoalition.com.
Maybe I'll do it.
Oh, yeah. That would be good to be my...
Thank you. So you end up, you're lobbying... You become a lobbyist.
And I didn't know what lobbying was.
Can you explain to our listeners what a lobbyist does?
Well, you know how lobbying started?
How?
I don't remember. The White House was being remodeled and the president couldn't live there. So he lived across the street in the Willard Hotel, which is this very nice, it's always been a very nice, fancy hotel. And instead of people coming to his office in the White House, because you could do it back then, it was in, I think, the 1800s, to go, you know, advocate for various things, they come to the lobby of the Woolard Hotel to meet with him.
And that's where that name came from.
Yeah. And I don't think it was such a dirty word back then.
And now, so a lobbyist essentially is an influencer, is someone
who... You know what? As a former lobbyist, we like to call ourselves educators.
Okay, great. You're an educator. Some of your clients, the recording RIAA, Recording Industry Association.
Association of America, which was led by Hillary Rosen.
Yes, Hillary Rosen, who I know very well.
Me too. She was my first client.
Really? Oh,
yeah.
You also were a lobbyist for not great things. Is that correct?
Well, you know, everything has a constitutional right.
Right. And you were doing this job, and some of your clients were people you would not work with today, correct?
Okay, I believe in the Constitution.
Okay. You're taking the fifth. What do you learn? Like, you're going, like, what is your day like? You go, all right, so you have the RIAA, right?
So my first job with the RIAA, and again, I was a kid, so my first job was cutting up Billboard magazines, pasting them on the articles on a piece of paper and giving it to the lead lobbyist that was working on issues.
So what would the lead lobbyist do? Like, they'd go to the office.
Back then, it was the big issues that arose were, there were dirty lyrics.
That was a bit, you know, I remember this with Al Gore's wife, Tipper, wanted to put a rating. It's in my book, actually. Yes, I can say that.
Yes, it is in your book.
She wanted to put a rating on these, you know, CDs, because that's what we used to, albums and CDs.
The warning label. She wanted to put warning labels.
And what did you think of that?
Well, it was, that's sort of my, it sounds kind of, you know, I am the weirdo that, like, I love learning about the Constitution. And I really hadn't thought about that at all. And what does the Constitution protect? And what does, you know, what is private industry versus how, and it's also a weird juxtaposition too, as to how government should be involved, because it's such a weird crossover too, because as liberals, you know, many, you know, liberals believe in choice, and we believe in a lot that the government, you know, should not get involved in. And then we also believe that, you know, the government does need to protect us.
Right.
So I learned a lot about intellectual property and the protection of intellectual property. And what's also interesting is that our laws and legislation really hadn't been changed since the Gutenberg press. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I love intellectual property so much. There is a Gutenberg press in the Library of Congress that I used to go visit periodically.
No way.
Yeah, I'm just such a loser. I do. I like to see it. You know, I like to, it gave me, yeah. So dirty lyrics, and I remember getting, you know, it was really kind of fun because everyone would be getting boring faxes at the office and I'd get dirty lyrics faxed to me.
Right.
So it was really, and so with Tipper Gore's whole thing about legislation, I do remember this, and I think this was Al Gore. You know, Nashville has always been the biggest music capital of the country. And I think it was I don't think Al Gore knew how this was going to blow up. And this was his constituency. So, and I also think that, listen, Hillary, the guy named Jay Berman RIAA then, very brilliant in how they approached it and being able to recording, the RIAA, the Recording Industry Association of America, is a trade association for the record labels. And they were very skilled in having record labels police themselves and saying, listen, we will put the warning labels on. We'll police it ourselves. But the interesting thing was, is that sales skyrocketed when there was a warning label.
Right. So the government did not.
No. So there were lots of hearings. And that was also really interesting to do, to help write testimony.
Right.
And I just learned so much. I learned so much after college. And really how, you know, we all, how a bill becomes a law. It's just so interesting.
Well, so did you testify before Congress, or were you there when they were testifying?
I was there, and it was, you know, I always thought that the most interesting ones were the ones who you couldn't really go that far off the trail, but it was just the ones that would speak from the heart. And that's sort of getting back to your original point about celebrities and testifying and, or celebrities and getting involved in issues. One of the things that is our mantra, the Creative Coalition, is don't be a carpetbagger. Right. As a celebrity or as someone, you know, someone who has a brand or whatever it is, you should only get involved in issues that concern you.
Right. And that you're passionate about. Right.
And that it means something to you, that affect you and your family or your community. No one likes a carpetbagger.
Right. I remember that. And people turned on Tipper Girl. I mean, I see her point. I don't think the government should do it, but I do.
You and know, that really
you
was
rate a movie. It's just giving people more information.
And that was her point. That was her point, to give more information. It was funny.
But people fucking turned on her like unbelievable.
You know, her point was not even, I don't know if you remember this, Steve Allen. You remember his group that he had? He was really instrumental. It was a consumer group that led boycotts of various
right.
television shows. And he would say, you know, vote with your dollar. Don't buy these products that are advertising these, which was actually fine. You
right.
should vote with your dollar. And that's what our free society is about.
Right.
It was really interesting because he wasn't asking for the government to take a stand on it.
He was telling people to take
enterprise.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's show business. It's not show government. It's not show we want to be nice. It's business.
First of all, one of my bucket list, I want to testify before, like I used to think.
Let's make it happen.
Okay. Yeah. But I used to think it must be so scary and oh, Congress. And then now I watch it, you know, so much of that, I guess, reference to, you know, oh, you're a congressperson, you know, I'm going to talk. There's so many of them that are scumbags. Like I would.
But you know what, Judy? There's so many that aren't.
That are not. Right. But I feel like I wouldn't be as afraid, you know?
But I have to give a shout out for those people who are elected officials, who are policymakers. It's a terrible job. The pay, you know, is not great. It puts you in the spotlight. You know, half the people in your community don't like you.
Right.
Don't like what you're doing. And it puts your family, it's a great strain on your family.
Yeah. Are you ever pinching yourself like, oh my God, I can't believe this?
I love my job. I love going to work or going to my desk now.
And the people you talk to, like you're so beloved too.
I never take it for granted because I said, I love experience and experience.
Right, right.
And how am I living life to the fullest? I'm getting to talk to the people like that 10, 20% of people who are running the world.
Right.
And
it's just amazing.
Awesome.
One day you bring the songwriters Lieber and Stoller to the Oval Office to meet Bill Clinton. Now, if you don't know them, they wrote Stand By Me. They wrote a bunch of great.
They were the most prolific songwriters of the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
So you're in the office with Bill Clinton and you're sucking his. No. And you're in the office with Bill
That's
Clinton.
The other-
And you have this meeting planned because he wants to meet Lieber and Stoller.
What I was doing, he loves music. He does, you know, he loves music. He was big Lieber.
I mean, the sax. Yeah, he played the sax. Yeah.
Big Lieber and Stoller fan. So I, you know, I'm like, well, take advantage of the moment. I've never been in the Oval Office.
So you go in the Oval Office with them for a meeting.
And
can you tell everyone why you had to cut the meeting short?
I can. So I was pregnant with my first daughter, my eldest daughter, Aliza. And she was born on May 14th and this was May 13th. So I'm there and we actually had to wait several hours for him, which was fine. Yeah, he's the president and doing presidential things. And so I start feeling, again, first kid, you know, the first one, you start feeling labor, you're not sure what's going on.
Right.
It's a lot. And so I'm kind of pacing back and forth, and his secretary says to me, do you think you should be here? And I'm like, yeah, I'm not missing this meeting. I mean, I've never been in the Oval Office. You have to pick a crowbar to get me out. And so I'm kind of, and again, you're like, things are happening. Things right. are happening in my belly. So and now then they sit us down inside the Oval, which now I'm like hanging out in the Oval for like an hour. It was just, I just loved it. And so, but I'm still having labor pains.
Right.
So now I'm getting a little bit nervous. So he finally comes in, he's having a grand time with them. He wants to play, what's the flip side? Like, what's the flip side of Kansas City?
Right.
And so
we should explain to the listeners.
Oh, right.
When the record came out, there was the A side and the B side. And the A side was always the hit song, and the B side was the flip side, which was the other song.
So it was, you know, we're playing and now I'm getting a little bit nervous, and it was, and so I'm like, yeah, if it had been my second or third, I would have just stayed
right
in the Oval. Cause what an experience. But again, the first you're like thinking you have to be with doctors, and Dr. Clinton, he wasn't. And so I finally, things are happening. And I said, I cut a meeting short with the president. That's like craziness.
Right.
I said, Mr. President, thank you very much, but we have to go now.
You said that?
Yes. And it was like,
Why didn't you let them stay? Did you tell him why?
Well, no, because I didn't want to go into the whole, it was just weird. I mean, again, I was, you know, young and.
Were Lieber and Stoller like, what the fuck are you doing?
They were like, what the fuck are you doing? Are you kidding me? And I'm like, at this point, scooting out the door as much as one can scoot in labor.
And then, okay, so you go out of the door, and then did you tell them?
They kind of, it was kind of obvious. Like, I'm like crawling and holding onto the walls. And they can't get me to GW Hospital quickly.
Right. That is fuck. And he never knew.
But talk about how wonderful he, so a couple months later, there's a state dinner and I got invited to it. And that is so cool. That is, it's just like it was back in
how many people go to a state dinner?
I know. Isn't that cool that I got, so, and you go and you have to like, you get announced and then you shake
and you walk on that. Yeah.
And he said to me, how's the baby?
I once performed for him, and I did stand-up comedy as well. No, I once performed for him at a Democratic fundraiser in Miami Beach. And, you know, they were the worst audience because they were all like, you know. After the show, he came up to me. He remembered everything I said. He said, oh, you ran the marathon, because I had just run the marathon, New York City Marathon. How was that? You know, I'm like, oh my God, I love you. It's like, you're the only person.
All you want to do is
big blue eyes.
So when I was in labor in the office, I remember, you know, cause he took my hand and he went, you know, so he said something nice to me and he like listened.
Melt.
Yeah. I was just, and yeah, usually, you know, I go for like the Jewish guy.
Yeah.
He's so
charismatic. Like there is beyond.
Yeah. And he listened to me.
I love our new sponsor, Fast Growing Trees. It is the biggest online nursery in the United States with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers, of which I am one of them. They have everything you want, really, seriously, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. And I know you're thinking, Judy, you live in an apartment in New York City. What's with the fast-growing trees? Well, let me tell you something. You don't need to have a yard or a lot of space. You can grow lemon, avocado, olive, or fig trees inside your home. And guess what I have? A fig tree in my office, and I fucking love it. I love it. Hi, Avi. His name is Avi. And I love him. And he brightens up. It makes me so happy. And I talk to him. Okay, I know I'm going overboard, but having plant life in your house is so comforting. And I love fast-growing trees. Thank you for this beautiful fig tree. They have a 30-day alive and thrive guarantee. They offer free plant consultation forever, okay? And I just got a new pot for Avi, so I'm going to be calling them and asking them the correct way to put it in there. You will find the perfect thing for your climate, for your space, for your aesthetic needs. It's great. I love it. I have a plant, and it's so, I'm telling you, it has made me much happier, and you know how happy I am. Anyway, this spring, which is, you know, spring is, it is the growing season. This spring, Fast Growing Trees has the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals, and listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using code JUDYGOLD at checkout, fastgrowingtrees.com, code JUDYGOLD. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. You're welcome.
You also, a lot of people don't know this, you were in Al Gore's house when he conceded. Is that correct?
I was. It was.
How did that happen?
Well, it was funny that it was the holiday party, the vice president's holiday party.
Were you at the vice president, is the residence really nice? What's the residence like?
It's not like the executive, the White House.
Well, how big is it?
It's pretty big. It's on Massachusetts Avenue, and it's called the Naval, it was like the old Naval Academy.
Yeah.
It was funny because it was the holiday party and it was this like kind of a dark room for the beginning of the party. And I remember Tipper Gore came up to me and she said, she was walking towards me and I couldn't see because it was kind of dark. And I said to my husband, who is this woman that's following me around? That's why I got glasses. But then somehow it was me and Sheryl Crow and Scooter Weintraub, our agent, and Whoopi Goldberg. It's like, I'm an unidentified woman.
Right.
Somehow we're all in his little den. And he was saying, you know, and he was like, well, yeah, I gotta, you know.
Did he know, like, he knew that before that party?
Yeah, I mean, we were kind of like, I just remember, I don't remember who it was, joking around going, yeah, call him up and just start prank calling, you know.
Yeah.
Look, it was, you know, lighthearted.
That was so, don't you think that was completely unfair?
I don't know. Because
that was ridiculous. And can, you know, I think about that election, especially now with this motherfucker. But
I mean, I don't know because I don't remember how all the counts came down.
Right. But the Supreme Court decided. And can you imagine? Can you imagine where we would be? Because they say now, because of all those days of no transition, that's where the sort of the Osama bin Laden stuff started to fall through the cracks. And now this fuckhead isn't, well, like, grow the fuck up. Grow up. It's not about you. The Gore girls, very attractive.
Oh, they're great. They're just the kids.
I remember going, oh my God, they're so beautiful.
All the kids from that.
And, yeah. I have a question. Were you surprised when they got divorced?
You know, I think, again, going back to public servant, and it's not an easy job.
Oh yeah. I can't.
You know, it's even, I think, worse then, you know, it's harder than a celebrity in that everything is public scrutiny and the public has a right to know everything. And remember, you're living in several places at once and your family's somewhere. And, you know, I couldn't do it.
I know. I couldn't do it either. But so, I always thought they like loved each other. Like, I knew the Clintons had issues, but I always thought, those two love each other, but you just don't fucking know.
You know, don't we all know in our old age?
Yeah,
we never know what's going on behind closed doors.
That's like, very true.
Think, didn't you always think growing up that your family was insane?
But oh, yeah.
We're like, you know.
Perfect. Also, I have to say, as I get old, you realize the person in the relationship who you think is the crazy one is never the crazy one. It's always the other.
You know, you just don't know what's going on behind closed doors.
So after you're a lobbyist.
Can I tell you when I got my Creative Coalition job again? So I have my older daughter, my middle daughter, pregnant again with Kiki, the little one, and who's in Israel now on a fellowship. So I'm pregnant with her. And remember Rolodex?
Yeah, Rolodex.
So I was lobbying for the MPAA and RIAA, and Creative Coalition was on the horizon because Chris Reeve and Ron Silver and Susan Sarandon and Alec Baldwin had started it. And
it was called something else though when they started.
No, it was not. That was the other one that.
In 1988 or something. Yeah.
Duff started, which actually they were one of my clients. What was it called?
I read about it. It was something about having a homeroom, like you that you said that these actors would see each other, the ones you just named would see each other like at acting classes or at auditions,
right?
And then they'd see each other demonstrating for something, and right. They realized
so they became this tribe of activists who happened to be actors or who wanted to pursue acting. And it was right around when the Creative Coalition was formed. It was galvanized when Ronald Reagan wanted to zero out the National Endowment of the Arts.
That was beyond. Yeah.
Yeah. And it just the whole thing about it, that it happened to be Reagan that did it. But anyway, the folklore goes that Susan said to Ron Silver or Ron said to Chris, or I don't remember who had the idea first. But they say, listen, we know how we were political science minors and majors. Let's go down. We have some sort of influence. Let's use our celebrity to go to Washington. They literally went door to door. They rode the train from New York to D.C. They boned up on everything, all their facts and figures. They just like a lobbyist would do, just like any advocate. And they went door to door getting votes. And it was really so I remember when they got the story about how they got Orrin Hatch's vote, and they appealed to him because did you know Orrin Hatch was a Grammy winner?
What? For what?
Orrin Hatch won a Grammy for a spoken word album.
Oh, fuck him. I want to get nominated for a Grammy for my book. Everyone loved my audio book.
All right, let's do it. Done.
Now, you heard it here, folks.
Testify. Why don't we do a spoken word, you testifying, and we'll make an album out of it.
Okay.
Anyway, so I'd always known about the Creative Coalition and they would never return my calls. And I'm not like a big universe. I mean, I do believe in the universe. I just don't know how to do it. You know? So I put the little Rolodex card with the Creative Coalition number on my bulletin board in my office. And I would look at it every day. Like, I'm going to be you one day. So one day I get a call from Billy Baldwin. I'm in my office. I'm 9 months pregnant. I'm packing up because my third daughter, Kiki, was going to be, I had planned C-section the next day. So I'm packing up the office because I'm going to be on maternity leave. And the phone rings at 6 o'clock and it's Billy, who I'd never met before. And he goes, hey, it's Billy B, in that like Billy Baldwin voice.
Right.
And I thought, because I had just hired a clown named Billy B for my four-year-old's birthday party. So I said, oh, you know, the kids think you're so funny and the check's in the mail. Now he thinks I'm insane. He goes, you were recommended to head up the Creative Coalition. And, you know, so I'm just beyond. I can't believe it. This is my dream job.
Right.
So, but I'm supposed to have a baby in 8 hours. And I don't tell him I'm having a baby in 8 hours because
it's really not a big deal.
You know? It was just, I'm also not that sort of person that, you know, I can push out a baby and go.
Yeah.
I'm a cranky Jewish girl.
Yeah.
So I want a bell ring for that one.
Yeah.
So anyway, so Billy, he's talking a lot about the thing and it's like, my dream, but I'm having a baby in 8 hours. So I don't say anything. I said, oh, you know, I definitely want to talk to you about it. He goes, well, we need to hire somebody immediately because Alex going off to do this movie. I'm doing it. You know, we're all, because they have been doing it all hands on.
Right.
So he was supposed to, he said, well, I'll just call you tomorrow. I knew I was going to be in labor and delivering tomorrow, but I went, okay. So, because I'm agreeable and, you know.
Right.
So I'm in labor and delivery. And
this is pre-cell phone.
Well, they had a flip phone. It was some type of like.
I had a beeper or something. Yeah.
So I'm there and so the phone rings and I see it's this New York number. And it was Billy again.
And you're pushing?
I had not yet, but everyone was surrounding me.
Right.
I went, I'm like, can you just hang on a second? Me getting the phone, you know, and I'm like, And Billy was so enthusiastic. He was talking a lot and I couldn't really get a word in edgewise. And it was, and all I was going is, And so finally my doctor said, you know, there are millions of dollars of people waiting here. Can you get off the fucking phone? And so I'm like, okay. And so I had agreed to interview for the position on Monday. This was Friday. And I am not somebody who can just, you know, rally.
Help a kid out.
I'm not that person. I am needy, you know. So, but this is the dream job. So she came and then goes back to that college thing. Don't say anything and it'll all kind of work out.
Right.
So at that point in my house, I have the nanny for my older kids, the what was it? A doula, they called it.
Doula. Yeah. I had a doula.
That was like the earth crunchy. The baby nurse, my mother and my mother-in-law. So I thought, okay, I can just shoot up to New York and do the interview, stitched together.
Yeah. Cause it's not like a C-section. It's just like,
no, it was a stitches. C-section.
No, I'm saying, yeah. I'm being sarcastic.
Oh yeah. So I shot up there and I did the interview, but I also, back then they give you, when you had a C-section, they give you Percocets.
Yes.
So back in the day, and they also were like, oh, cause Percocets are safe to nurse a baby and it doesn't, whatever. And so for the first one, I was like, oh no, I can't be on drugs. And by the time Kiki came along, I was like, can I get more?
Yeah.
So I basically go to this interview stoned and leaking, you know, from everywhere.
I can't believe you went. Go ahead.
I know, but again, experiential, you know, Someone asked, I have this, it's probably from, again, back to the sardine sandwiches, that someone is inviting me to do something. I say,
Right.
So I go and I'm pretty much stoned out of my gourd. I'm, as I said, leaking out of every orifice. And I remember just doing that whole Folgers, that is good tasting coffee look on my face. Every time they'd say something, I'd be like, focus, nod. And then I got the job.
And you probably went home and fucking collapsed.
Oh, by the way, I didn't tell like the day of, I didn't tell anyone in my family. I was like the mother-in-law, because I didn't want them to be all judgy. And it's like, yeah, I'm just shooting up to New York.
Did you ever tell Billy that you had just had?
Yeah. He calls me the leaker. in the most politically correct way.
You know, there's so many things that at the Creative Coalition, what is your consciousness? You know, these are so important. What is the white hat? What is that?
That is, you know, it's so, I don't know if that's an old expression. I always use it. I mean, it's wearing, I hope that most of us wear a white hat. And that was, I think that expression was coined about 20, 30 years ago. And it's about what do you do to do good?
Right.
And what I try to do with our constituency of celebrity leaders in the entertainment industry, leaders in the art world, what do you do to do good? Because where, you know, again, people in our industry, you have your agent, you have your manager, you have your publicist. What's your issue?
Right.
And it just, I think, and you know, you being a focus group of one, it's got to make your work better.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I couldn't live with myself, first of all. And, you know, I do see, well, first of all, I see how the arts affects people. I see how comedy affects people. But I also, you know, I'm a gay parent.
You got issues.
I'm a woman. I'm a Jew. I am really upset about racism. I'm not a person of color, but I do feel, you know, awful. I don't know. I just feel like the woman thing really felt like, don't tell me what I can and cannot do with my body. You know, like, just shut the fuck. You don't want to have an abortion. Don't have a fucking abortion, but don't tell anyone else, you know. But also the fact that, you know, I used to do this bit in my act about all the people that could get married and I couldn't. And, you know, like Eric and Lyle Menendez kill their parents while they're sitting on the couch eating ice cream. They go to jail for life. They get married in jail. And I can't get married. Because it's like, it's just so ridiculous when you break it down. So,
and doesn't your, and your kaveh, whatever your art is, has got to be more 3D, more texture, because you do care.
Right. Absolutely.
About something.
Right. You do. You do take into consideration what is the right thing to do.
But you know what the interesting thing is, as whatever you're wearing your white hat on, whatever issues you're taking on, and especially those in television or film, or half of your fans won't like it.
Right.
And when people say, oh,
and that's why people don't do it.
Well, and also, but when people say, oh, that celebrity's doing it for the glory, there's no glory in advocacy. There's just no glory in it.
I know. But it's like, I can't be silent. I couldn't live with myself. You know, like Steve Martin didn't say anything about, and then, you know, finally he said vote for Biden. But look at Jim Gaffigan. Jim Gaffigan kept his, and then he couldn't take it anymore.
It's, you know, and it's funny because I, as an organization, the Creative Coalition is nonpartisan because we're a nonprofit and that's how we have to be. But we encourage our members, go take a stand, be partisan. I mean, we get behind issues.
Right.
Most issues are not red or blue.
Are there any conservative members of the Creative Coalition?
Yes.
I just, the National Endowment of the Arts, to me, it's so important.
And I would say that most people don't understand what the NEA does. And
hello, PBS.
Well, it also gives grants to every congressional district. And again, I'm a kid growing up in Clemson, South
Carolina.
We do not have access. We did not have access to anything except community theater.
Right.
For miles. And that community theater, that's how I learned about, you know, Shakespeare, and it spoke to me.
Right.
So the NEA isn't this amorphous tree hugging entity. It is a direct impact and it can change. We know that the arts change people.
Oh, beyond. Look at Hamilton.
You look at the kid who is dyslexic, and it was through the school play that things started to crystallize about history.
Right.
And, you know, so it's, I don't understand why arts is the stepchild issue. It does, you know.
And sports. And sports.
Yeah, I don't understand. I don't understand. And even if you don't believe in the arts for art's sake, economically, for every dollar that a community puts into the arts, $7 comes back. Those are good Vegas odds.
That's a lot.
You know, so don't care if you don't care about the arts.
Yeah.
Look at the economy.
Exactly.
Hey, everyone. I have a new sponsor, and I love them. They're called OneSkin. OneSkin. And what is OneSkin? It is skincare. Skincare that is simple. I guess that's the perfect word. It's simple. It you don't have to put on 18,000 products while you're like dying to get in bed. OneSkin was founded by 4 PhDs dedicated to skin longevity. And this stuff proves you don't need a complicated routine to achieve better skin. Their supplements, they're topical, and they make it easy to help your skin stay younger and healthier without putting all that other shit, I said shit, on your face. And the secret of OneSkin is their OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient scientifically proven to reduce the buildup of senescent, did you like that? Senescent cells, those little cells that contribute to skin aging. And the fewer amount of cells that they're called zombie cells, that means healthier, younger looking skin, fewer wrinkles, fewer lines, reduced age spots, natural barrier. And that is very important, especially now it's spring and summer and you're going to be out in the sun. So, you know, you love your skin, so do something for it. Return it the favor of having skin and treat it nicely. Does that make sense? Well, so I'm very excited about OneSkin and I haven't gotten my product yet, but I am really, really, really looking forward. So I'm going to be giving you an update on my skin, but you should do it with me. For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off their first OneSkin purchase using the code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, when you check out at oneskin.co. That's oneskin.co. And it's oneskin.co. You really, really need to invest in your skin. It's very important. So OneSkin, you're going to do this today. You're going to go to oneskin.co. It is more than skincare. It's about skin longevity, targeting the root causes of aging to help you look and feel your best at every age. Get started today with 15% off using code JUDYGOLD at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code JUDYGOLD. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. It's time to expect more from your skincare routine. Invest in the health of your skin with OneSkin. You're welcome.
You have been with the Creative Coalition for over 20, how many years exactly?
22 years since my daughter was born. Since Kiki was born.
I mean, that's pretty amazing.
You know,
it's grown under you.
I love it. I do. You know what's so great about, what's so great about my job is that it allows me to create. It allows my team. And I have a great team. And you know that expression, they're tireless. They are tired because we freaking work 24/7.
Right.
But it's everyone loves what they do. I think, I hope out there, they you're doing it for a greater good. And you get to create.
Yeah.
We get to.
And get Judy a Grammy nom.
And testifying before Congress.
I got to figure out what I'm testifying about.
Yeah, we have to.
You are such a delight. I can't, it's to be so influential and important.
Wait, whoa.
You are. And yet you're so fucking normal. I can't believe how normal you are.
I can't believe we missed the first 40 something years.
I know. We would have been hanging out.
Actually, it's probably 50, but
Shut up. All right. So I ask my guests two questions, even though you don't like answering half my questions. Okay.
Well, I was a lobbyist, so I do have the spoken word.
Yes. Number one.
I can avoid any question.
I know. You're good. And with a smile on your face.
I was on O'Reilly a lot and never answered his question.
I know. I remember. I read that. What was that?
I was the only person who made him laugh because... and what you learn is it doesn't matter. When you're on these, especially the political talk shows, they have an agenda, and these political talk shows are entertainment first, and you don't have to answer their questions. You get your message.
Yeah. And Fox News is an entertainment network. It's not MSNBC and CNN are news networks, and they're an entertainment network, whatever. So it's all opinion. So we're very pro mental health. What do you do to keep your sanity?
What I hate? I when people say, go take a bath and,
Oh, shut the fuck up.
I know, exactly. Or watch the sunset.
All of that does, first of all, I don't fit in the bathtub. So I haven't taken a bath in God knows how long. The only time I get to take a bath is on the road and I can't go on the road. And I don't want to sit in fucking water.
I know, tepid water.
Right. All right.
But so what do I do for mental health? I do love people. I love learning about people. To me, talking to you, and I'm not just saying this, I just love the nuances and the learn. It's just like this big old lump of stuff not that you're a lump, but just that I can get in and I just I get to dive in more.
Yeah.
I love
that
texture of people. And then I realize how sane I am compared to
Yeah. Do you any antidepressants, any therapy?
No, I'm 100% believer in therapy, and I've had therapy throughout. And it was funny, the first time I went to therapy, I was probably maybe in my early 30s. I was a late bloomer in therapy. But I remember thinking, it's like a massage. It's so, and it's indulgent.
That's
and
interesting. Yeah.
Paying for it. How wonderful. So I just remember that. And when I also encourage people to go to therapy, I say, you know, it's a massage for your brain.
I know. And someone's just listening to you all the whole fucking time. It's all about you. That's why it's amazing Trump has never been to fucking therapy.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Well, wait, but do you ever, when you're talking to your therapist, like, I get so bored with my story.
I know. I'm like, that. Sometimes I'm like, I have this appointment. I don't feel like talking about myself right now.
Well, also I feel bad because I've said like the same thing over and over. And you must be just wanting to.
And they're just seeing dollar signs in their head. Okay. So here is the name of the podcast is Kill Me Now, because I get aggravated at everything. So what pisses you off more than anything? Like it could be anything. It could be, you know, people talking loud on their cell phone, but what makes you fucking crazy?
Well, can I do a pre-pandemic one?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's relevant now, but when people would say, hold the elevator. Like, what? The next one's coming.
Right.
It's a cycle.
I can grab that one. I can do that. All right. That depends on how many elevators there are and how far away the person is.
You know what, though? I take umbrage, and I wanted to work that word into the whole podcast.
I like it.
Because you know what, you should have been there earlier. Yeah, I'm not holding the elevator for you.
I just want to
be up front with us. When we are together or you're meeting, I'm not holding the elevator for you.
So if someone yells, hold the elevator, do you just don't?
I go like this. Like I can't find the button.
So you're standing there and then the door closes.
I'm a fake drinker. I'm a fake elevator button holder.
I like that.
I can't find it. It's not working.
Hold the elevator. I love that. I love that. I do. But I hate this. Can I just say something? This is what fucking pisses me off. These fucking elevators where in the lobby you press what floor you're going to go to and then it tells you what. Don't fucking tell me what elevator to get into. And then all these other people are like, I'm like, no.
No, they're called smart elevators.
I hate them. Don't fucking control my life.
I don't even understand them. I mess it up. Like I'll stand in front of the wrong one and then the one across the way opens and closes.
Wait, what about how I'll press it?
How hard was it to use an elevator?
Right. But now I press, you got to put your floor in and then it tells you like B4, that's the elevator you're going to go to. And I'm like, okay, B4. And then I walk over and I'm like, wait, what? I totally forget which fucking, and then it comes. And I'm like, oh my God, I was looking at my phone. I'm like, you're fucking annoying.
You know what it reminds me of? Do you remember those seat belts that used to be automatic that you get in and it would like.
Oh, and it would go. Yeah.
Yeah. So when I was pregnant, I also was throwing up everywhere. So I'd have to open my car door as I was driving to work and then it would.
Right.
Bam.
Oh God. So fucking annoying.
Like what was so hard about putting on a seatbelt?
Yeah. Now I'm really pissed off.
And that was back when the
smart elevators.
Remember the talking cars? The door is ajar.
It's
a door.
Hey, now that's funny. By the way, I've been doing the joke about Zoom saying goodbye on Zoom being the longest Jewish goodbye on everything. I now act it out. It's one of my best bits. People love it. Written by Robin Bronk. So I have to thank you for that.
Well, you do have to thank me.
Yeah. I have to thank you for a lot. So Robin, where can people find you and your two books? The money goes to charity. The books are sort of coffee table photo.
Yeah. It's actually I have three books.
That's what I meant. Three books.
One I co-wrote with Ron Reagan Jr.
I love him. Rotten hell. I fucking love him. How did he's so into the arts and I can't believe he's not gay, but
he's the best, just kindest, gentlest.
Oh my God. I love him. Did he get along with his parents?
Yeah. He's a gentle, yeah.
He seems like such a good soul. He has a lot of convictions. Yeah.
Gentle soul. I haven't talked to him in way too long.
Not afraid to rot in hell. It's my favorite.
He
proud atheist, not afraid. It's burn in hell. Not afraid to burn in hell. I love him.
The wonderful guy.
So what did you write? What was that book?
Called If You Had 5 Minutes with the President, and HarperCollins put it out, and it was interviewing celebrities, and the money all went to the Creative Coalition Arts Fund, and interviewing celebrities. If you had 5 minutes in the Oval Office with George W. Bush, it was right at the beginning of his first term, what would you say? What would your issue be? And that was fun to do and interview everyone. And then my second book was called Art and Soul. And it is gorgeous photography by the
beautiful
prize winner, Brian Smith, who, and we just, what was the backstory of, you know, of what gives you your art and soul?
Right.
And then my most recent one was with, and that was Hachette. And then the most recent one I did with Jeff Vespa photographed it. Nancy Ruemi of Ruemi Design designed it. And it's called The Art of Discovery. And I would ask you, what was the moment you discovered you were going to be an artist and make your life the arts? And I interviewed everyone from Flea, from the Black Eyed Peas, to Kate Hudson. And
wow.
Great. It's a good, you know what it is? Because not many of us, it's not like many people came from a lot.
Right.
Joe Mangiali talks about his dad wanted him to be a football player and he got thrown out of the house when he wanted to be an actor and he lived in his car. And another actress talks about her mother was a single working parent and the one job that she had out of the three jobs, one of the things was playing the piano at community theater.
Wow.
And this actress would sit under the piano as her mother played. And that was her, she saw her mother's happiness.
Wow.
And so it's not like, you know, it's very aspirational how one can, you know, do something that they dream of. And you don't have to, you know, you just have to have one of the things I thought was very interesting, Joey Pan says this, you can't have a plan B.
Right. I say that too. Like, you know, I say it to comics. They're like, oh, I work during the day. And I go, well, once you decide to be a comic, you know, that's, you're still a comic, but you're not, you know, you gotta, that's all you can. Yeah, I agree.
So anyway, so you can find that on those on Amazon, but and you can also find it at thecreativecoalition.org on the internet.
On the intranet. Where can people find you so they can follow you?
Stalk me?
No, I'm the tweeter.
Okay. I'm Robin_Bronkett Instagram. I'm on Facebook at Robin Bronk.
B-R-O-N-K, everyone.
B-R-O-N-K. B as in boy. R-O-N-K. I wonder if I have to change that now to be more, you know, why B as in boy? B as in becoming.
God, B as in boy. What?
I said my book will be
un- say that. Yeah. I love that. I'm stealing that.
Take it.
I got a new writer, Robin Bronk.
What's your Twitter, Laura?
On Instagram, you're Robin_Bronk. On Facebook, you're Robin Bronk. On Twitter, you're R Bronk. And just search for the Creative Coalition on any of the platforms to follow the Creative Coalition.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you, Laura.
Doesn't Laura have a nice voice?
That's good, Laura. Laura's our producer.
Guys.
Yeah. Robin, I love you. This was so fun. I was really looking forward to it.
And now
I have nothing to live for.
Yeah, come out and see me in a socially distant.
I love your little. I love that place. Is not that's not your house, is it?
No, my house would be all cluttered.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's all white. Yeah. I can't do that. Thank you for being here. Please, everyone, check out the Creative Coalition.
Check out the Creative Coalition. Give to the arts, for goodness sake.
Yeah, give to the fucking arts. By the way, I did the PSA, the COVID PSA about obesity, and I got one little fucking thing in because I'm not that important. But it's fine.
No, you're very good. You're the highlight of it.
Oh, God, what do I say? It can help. Something like, and everyone else has like 10 lines, and I'm like.
No, but you're very sincere on yours.
Thank you. Thank you.
I want to go.
Thanks for including me. I appreciate it.
Oh, and we have more dinners coming up. I'm going to invite
you.
Oh,
okay, good. I love those.
Yeah.
With the breakout rooms. Even though the dinners at the Creative Coalition are supposed to be like an hour and a half, and they're 4.5 hours.
The funniest thing that about the leaving is that our people, everyone's like afraid they're going to miss something.
Right.
So no one will be the first one
to leave the dinner. These are virtual dinner.
Goodbye. I think they'll miss some swag.
Yeah. I didn't get my fucking swag yet.
You didn't?
No.
Well, is it in Providence?
It's called Provincetown. And if you fucking say Providence again, I'm going to fucking kill you. Did that at the night of the dinner, and I fucking hate you for that.
No, it's really because I just geography. That class that I missed, geography. Mm,
thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to part two of Kill Me Now with my friend Robin Bronk. Come on. I have some really cool friends, FY and I. Now, if you like the show, please tell everyone about it. Leave me a review. 5 stars only, please. I can't with the criticism. I had enough of that growing up. But, you know, I would love to grow the show like I grew my ass and my stomach over COVID. But, I'm proud of it. And I would like to get more listeners. Anyway, there's also the fact that this week is Hanukkah. Christmas is coming in a couple weeks. My book, yes, I can say that, When They Come for the Comedians, We're All in Trouble. It's a great book. I'm really proud of it. And it's a great gift, especially for people who love comedy and satire and humor and are interested in what the fuck is going on in our country and the fact that, you know, we can't take a joke anymore. So it comes in the audio book. It comes in the Kindle. It comes in the hardcover. And on my website, there are all these different links. You can buy from indie bookstores. You can buy wherever you want. But I just want you to know, I'm going to read a review that just was posted yesterday, okay? This is from a guy, okay, and I love him. I don't even know who he is, but listen to this review. This is one of the best books I have read this year, and while I wouldn't expect a book by a comedian to be the one to make me think the most, this one really did it. Judy does a great job of breaking down why we need to slow down and not jump on everything we hear online. It is easy to forget and get dragged into the online mob culture and not really recognize that we should allow people to make mistakes and forgive. Also, that people shouldn't be punished forever for most mistakes, especially if it's just some stupid tweet they made years ago. We have certainly been holding entertainers to higher standards than our politicians. Okay, so that's part one, and I love him. And then he writes, I highly recommend this book. Those on the right may be bothered by some of the Trump references because they have no fucking sense of humor. I added that in. But the book is balanced and really addresses the issue from all perspectives. Thank you, Robert Willinger or Willinger or Willinger or whatever. But that, I love that review because it really does. That's what I intended. And it is from both all sides, but only the Trumpies get upset. So there you go. It really would mean so much to me if you would check it out. As I said, all the order links are at judygold.com, JudyGold.com, or wherever books are sold. And please make sure to follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I am doing, events online and some live. And I would love for you to know about them and join in at Judy Gold, JudyGold, because you know I'm a Jew. So thank you all for listening. Happy Hanukkah! Woo! And as we always say, so long! Ga-ga-ga-ga!
And everything was wonderful. I'll see you soon. Thank you for the visit. So long.